The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I was also joined by Grail Nyberg and Nathan Glidewell. I was joined at AAA. First story we have today is quarterback Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles have agreed to a 5-year $255 million contract extension. The deal includes $179 million in guarantees and will make Hurts the highest paid player in NFL history. What are y'all's thoughts on this deal, guys? Do you think he deserved it?
Yeah, I do think he deserved it. I think it's about time these quarterbacks get paid like this. This is a lot of money, especially the guaranteed money is absolutely absurd. But with the seasons that Jalen Hurts had last year and bringing this Philadelphia Eagles team to a Super Bowl and the way he played down the stretch was absolutely phenomenal. Completed just over 66% of his passes and 22 touchdowns while also being an extreme run threat. It's about time he gets this extension. I'm excited about his future with the Eagles.
You know, if you would have told me a few years ago that Jalen Hurts would be in this situation, being the highest paid player in NFL history, I would have called you a clown because of his time in Alabama. We've seen what all he's been through, all the hardships, how much adversity he's shown. And now to get to this point, it's just amazing to see the type of player Jalen Hurts has become. And I know that these next few years will be great for him. And hopefully he can get this Eagles team a championship. I mean, a Super Bowl, not championship.
Yeah, I think it definitely was deserved. I think his agent, Nicole Lynn, did a great job negotiating this deal for Jalen Hurts. Really proud of him. Times Alabama was not very – I mean, he didn't end it in the great way possible, going out as a person on the bench, but he stayed there for that extra year to back up to, and he came up clutch. We needed him. Appreciate his time there. He really stood out at Oklahoma in his 1 year there as well. And he came in the NFL underrated just like he did at his time in Alabama and in Oklahoma, and he really proved himself after getting the starting position after Carson Wentz was out the door. I think he definitely deserved it. What do you think this means for Lamar Jackson with him looking for any contract extension?
I think this is going to start becoming the new standard, especially for these really dual threat and athletic quarterbacks who can really do anything with the football and have proven themselves in this league. I think this should mean that Lamar Jackson should be able to get a big time deal from Baltimore. But I guess we'll just wait and see if that actually happens.
I think it's just a matter of situation. You look at where Lamar Jackson is, who his backup is. Tyler Huntley is a great, really serviceable QB. And then you look at, you know, someone like Jalen Hurts, who has kind of proved himself to be the only reliable quarterback for the Eagles. So I think in that sense, the Ravens have a viable QB in their pocket without Lamar Jackson, so they don't have to go and spend all this money. I feel like Lamar Jackson, in order to kind of secure a better contract, he's going to come down in what he expects to be paid.
Yeah, I think the difference here is Jalen Hurts played majority of last year, except when he injured his shoulder. Lamar Jackson just like refused to play. It looked like he got injured. There's kind of speculation there that he wasn't really injured as much as he was putting on in the media. I think that kind of hurt what the Baltimore Ravens front office thought about him and his teammates. That kind of hurt him there. And also the fact that he doesn't have an agent. I believe his agent is himself and his mother. You look at Jalen Hurts, he has Nicole Lynn, who's probably one of the best sports agents in the country right now. I think that was a big difference there. So Lamar Jackson, like Nathan mentioned, is probably going to come down off his price. If he's going to want to play on the Ravens next year, I really don't see it happening. The Ravens are trying to do all they can signing Odell Beckham, but I don't think Lamar Jackson has a future with the Baltimore Ravens as of now. All right, the second story we have today is Arizona Cardinals safety Buda Baker has requested a trade from the team. Baker is the only player supposedly out the door in Arizona, as wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins has been granted the ability to seek a trade out with another team. But what are your thoughts with going on in Arizona with we got Baker and Hopkins wanting out, then the Kyler Murray situation and all their front office debacle?
Yeah, it seems kind of interesting. You didn't see this happening at Arizona right until relatively recently with Hopkins and Buda Baker and all the stuff that happened with Kyler Murray at the tail end of this past NFL season. It was just kind of interesting. I don't really know what to think of what's happening and their situation. We don't really know what's happening in their front office. Obviously, Arizona's at a good spot with Kyler Murray as the franchise quarterback and at the third having the third overall pick. They could be trading down, taking somebody like Will Anderson or Jalen Carter, somebody like that. But it'd be interesting to see. I'm excited to see where somebody like Buda Baker or DeAndre Hopkins ends up if they're able to get those trades and get out of Arizona. Buda Baker is a phenomenal safety, very young safety that could make an NFL team very, very happy. Has made the Cardinals happy very, 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 very much recently. So I'm excited to see where those two end up and where this situation with the Cardinals happens.
You know, it definitely goes back to the past few years where Cliff Kingsbury hasn't gotten this team to where they need to be. They haven't seen postseason success, or they've missed the postseason. And obviously, with the amount of talent they had, that has been a complete disappointment to Cardinals fans, and it's been a complete disappointment to the players. And now with all these other situations, you look at Kyler Murray, of course, you know, with his injury, he's not going to be able to be 100% for the start of the next season. And of course, DeAndre Hopkins wanting out, you have all these other players being influenced by that. I think a guy like Buda Baker doesn't want to waste his prime on a team like the Cardinals, where he's just not going to have overall success. I think that DeAndre Hopkins' time in the league is coming close to an end, and he obviously doesn't want to be with his Cardinals team anymore and waste his time. So there's got to be a lot of tough decisions made on this Cardinals team. I think that if anything, they should be looking towards a rebuild.
Yeah, if you look at Buda Baker, he reportedly informed the team in February that he either wanted to be traded or receive a deal that would make him the NFL's highest-paid safety. When he signed his original deal that he's on right now, he was the highest-paid safety. Obviously, now he's not. Few players have surpassed him at that point. But I look at that and the fact that the Cardinals gave Kyler Murray a five-year, a $230 million contract extension kind of puts them in a just cap hell right now, the way they're looking. And being able to put Kyler Murray on that contract and then trying to sign Buda Baker or something is just not going to be good for this team. And I think, like Nathan mentioned, it's a time for them to go into a rebuild and just build this team up. A lot of these players are aging. You had J.J. Watt retire. You got Hopkins on the way out and Buda Baker. They just need the whole rebuild. And I look at a team like the Philadelphia Eagles to go heavy after Buda Baker. We saw it last year when they went after C.J. Gardner-Johnson on the Saints. And they just lost him. And they also lost other starting safety Marcus Epps to free agency. I know they signed Terrell Edmonds, but I look at this team – have a lot of need a lot of help in the back end, other a secondary. I think Buda Baker would be a great option for them, especially since they have a lot of picks in this first round. All right, the third story we have today is Memphis basketball signee Mikey Williams was arrested last Thursday on multiple counts of assault with a deadly weapon. He has since been released after paying a $50,000 bond. The arrest stems from a March 27th shooting at a home in San Diego County. An argument just before midnight ended with gunshots being fired at a car that was leaving the house with five passengers inside it. Bullets hit the car, but nobody was injured, police said. What are y'all's thoughts on Mikey Williams in this situation, and do you think his future is in jeopardy?
Yes, absolutely. You can't be involved in the situation and your future not be in jeopardy. You know, this is it's becoming way too much of a regular thing nowadays, and it's really sad, and it's really frustrating to see for everybody, but especially for some of these really high level athletes that have such bright futures ahead of them. And you can see it. You can physically see the kind of future that Mikey Williams had in front of him, with him signing to Memphis and all the viralness that he's gotten from online and his athletic ability. But this is ridiculous. He should not be allowed to go to Memphis. You can't go from an argument to gunshots like that. It's just this is hard to talk about. It's hard to see happen to anyone. And we hope that everybody's okay in this situation and it all works out.
Obviously, this is like one of the biggest ways to throw your career away. I think it's become much too common of a thing for college basketball players or people entering college basketball to be distracted by these outside situations. I think it's a cultural issue. It stems down to the promotion of just violence overall, and needs to come to an end. You have a guy who has everything in front of him, NIL deals, Memphis commit. He was set up to be super successful, and then you go and do something stupid like this, and you just ruin your career.
Yeah, you look at Michael Williams, like I said, he has a very big future in front of him, and it's throwing it away like this. You can't be yourself in a position to be in this type of thing. I don't understand what he was thinking in the situation at all. Just throwing his career away. We've seen it with John Morant and Darius Miles. Both those guys, obviously, two separate situations. Darius Miles ending up in the death of somebody, and which is very sad. And you have John Morant, who's just been, I don't know what John Morant's been doing. Obviously, he's had the situation somewhat resolved as of now. We haven't really heard much since. But look at Michael Williams. You can't just be following these guys' footsteps, especially in this type of situation. It's just hard for me to see this. And like you said, Greg, hopefully everybody's okay and it all works out. All right, Nathan. First week of USFL Season 2. What do you got for us?
Man, I've been waiting for this to be back. I think that spring football is one of the best times to play football. You have that, you know, kind of gap in between, you know, college football and NFL, and it just ended, and college basketball just ended, and you're just overall ready to watch football again. So this is a great filler. Let's go and jump right into it. Our offensive player of the week, Michigan Panthers QB Josh Love, who was 18 of 20, 215 yards and 3 touchdowns. He was phenomenal. But I think that the biggest player on that team, our defensive player of the week, was Michigan Panthers D, Breland Speaks, who had 3 sacks, 7 tackles, and 1 forced fumble. He was all over the place. I want to go ahead and start off just by talking about this Michigan Panthers team, who has taken such a jump from where they were last year. Alex, what did you see in week one from this Panthers team to prove that they're one of the better teams in this league?
Yeah, I think the first thing it comes to is their quarterback play. Last year, they probably had the worst quarterback room outside of maybe the Ballers in the entire league. It was just abysmal. Their head coach, Jeff Fisher, was atrocious. I think that was a big thing for them, moving on from their other quarterbacks and getting rid of Jeff Fisher. Hiring a guy in Mike Nolan, I think that was a big move, even though Mike Nolan sort of had an issue with the Cowboys in his last stint in the NFL as defensive coordinator. But you look at his team, greatly improved, getting a guy in Josh Love, who was just their backup last year, didn't even get playing time, to be able to establish him and get a good win from just the way he completed passes, only missing 2, I think was great. Then you got a guy in Breland Speaks, like you mentioned, 3 sacks, 7 tackles. I think that was great, getting constant pressure from him and being a leader of the defense. Then you also look at a guy and Joe Walker, the wide receiver, who had 6 receptions, 105 yards, and a touchdown. Him and Josh Love were just a dynamic duo. I think his team is really poised to make a run. And honestly, I think they look like they're probably the best team in the league.
Greg, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I kind of do. The way they played, especially in the second half against Houston, was very, very impressive. Just like Alex was saying, the quarterback play has probably went from the worst to the best. In this past offseason, you know, hiring that new coaching staff and all. But just like Alex said, they've got playmakers on the offensive end, like Joe Walker, like Trey Quinn and those guys. And then you've got that amazing defense, just like you said, Nathan, led by Breland Speaks, had some really nice plays. They were able to shut down that Houston offense in the second half to come back from – they were down at halftime. The Gamblers weren't able to score in the second half. So this Michigan Panthers team has taken that step, and I'm excited to see what that turns into down the stretch of this season.
Yeah, definitely. Not to go away from special teams at all. It's very important. So our special teams player of the week was New Orleans Breakers kicker Matthew Colvin, who was 5 of 5 with a 55-yard field goal, and he was 1 for 1 on extra points. He basically secured the win for the New Orleans Breakers in the first week, but we'll get into that really quick. Our first game of the week was the Philadelphia Stars versus the Memphis Showboats. Obviously, the Stars took the game 27-23. I think that the main storyline from this game was not only that the Stars have looked like one of the greatest offensive teams in the league, but they've slowly started to improve their defense as well. I think another big thing is that the Showboats really got it going late in the game. They're starting to gain some chemistry.
Yeah, I think you look at this team, Nathan, and I was going into the game, I really thought the Showboats were going to get blown out. We look at the quarterback, Brady White. He played the best he possibly could with 182 yards, a touchdown. Interception, not really looking great there. But, I mean, they kept it close with the Stars, who were probably one of the top 2 teams in the league, maybe top 3, depending on who you talk to. But the Stars quarterback, Case Cookies, you look at him, he was a favorite going into the season, beat MVP this year. He had 212 yards, 3 touchdowns and interceptions. He was the team's leading rusher. He played lights out. He put his body on the line multiple times, getting first downs, extra yardage. Thought that was great. Then I look at their big addition this offseason, wide receiver Corey Coleman, a former first-round pick. He had 4 receptions, 65 yards. He was playing really good. The wide receiver room looks great. Kind of disappointed in Jordan Sewell only having one reception, 9 yards. He made Birmingham's defense in the championship last year look terrible. So hopefully he can get back on track. Their offense was 4-for-4 in red zone and touchdowns. That was also something to look at. Like Nathan mentioned, they have one of the best offenses in the league. And then you have their defensive back, Channing Stribling, having an interception, leaving off where he ended last year, or starting off where he left last year, being the interception leader. I think this team's really well-rounded. I think the Showboats would have a great fight, but I think just the star power of the Stars were just too much for them.
Yeah, I agree. The Stars, just like Alex said, were one of my favorites to come into this year. Maybe top two, top three, just like Alex said. But Case Cook is really, really good. And then you've added all these really, really good weapons around him, and it's just made him better. I just like Alex said, I expected this one to be a blowout as well. But the Showboats played really well. Alex Collins played really well. Rashard Davis had two unbelievable receptions from Brady White. I really like the Showboats. I think they could put it together down the stretch, but this Stars team has an unbelievable offense with star-studded all around. I expect the Stars to just continue their role, and maybe we could see them making another run again.
All right, moving on to our second game on Saturday, the New Jersey Generals versus the Birmingham Stallions. The Stallions ended up taking that 27-10. The Generals really had the ball the majority of the game, dominating time of possession, and they outgained the Stallions 361 yards to 310. I think the main thing from this game was the Stallions defense being able to create turnovers. You really look at where the Generals struggled on offense. They couldn't be consistent, really. And then you look at the Stallions offense, where they kind of had the 1-2 punch with Jamar Smith starting in the first half, and then Alex McGee coming in the second half and really closing things out. I think that the biggest question for the Stallions team is, can they get the running game going? They really didn't attack much on the ground. Most plays were through the air. You look at a guy in Bo Scarborough where you really expect him to have the majority of the touches. He only had two carries and he had -1 yards. So I think that's one of the biggest surprising things. Alex, what do you see from the Stallions team, and where can they improve the most?
Yeah, I think they have the best 1-2 punch at quarterback with Jamar Smith and Alex McGee. I think they're probably one of the only teams in the league that can rotate quarterbacks. We saw other teams do it throughout the weekend. Didn't work out, especially when you look at the Generals. But like you said, Nathan, their running game was atrocious. Giving Bo Scarborough two carries is mind-boggling to me, considering how he ended last year in the championship game. They really need to get that run game going, get that run-blocking scheme worked on, especially if they're going to have to rotate these quarterbacks and deal with some injuries to guys like Jamar Smith like they did this game. But I was really impressed with their their passing game. When their first pass of the game was a 61-yard bomb to Austin Watkins, the UAB, a former UAB player, was awesome to see. See him get that there. Then you have Jay Sternberger leading the team in receptions. He was a really good go-to guy for Magoo when he came in. I really enjoyed that. But losing a wide receiver, Marlon Williams, who was our go-to guy last year outside of Victor Bolden and was looking to be the number one this year, was definitely a big loss for us. Tearing his Achilles. Hopefully he comes back next season stronger than ever. But you look at their defense, Christian McFarland, 12 tackles, seven of them solo. He kept coming on blitzes, just unblocked. He looked amazing. He had blazing speed coming in there, covered the ball well. I think he did a great job. And John Chavis did a great job scheming up against this Generals team. But looking at the Generals, they tried to run a two-quarterback scheme with Dakota Prukup and DeAndre Johnson. Didn't really work out. Neither of them really got anything going, both of them throwing zero touchdowns and interceptions. DeAndre Johnson looking worse of the two. I think they're, like the commentators were mentioning during the broadcast of the game, these two guys have very similar play styles. And like last year, when the Generals had Perez at quarterback, he was more of a pocket passer alongside DeAndre Johnson, who more of a scrambler. I think that kind of hurt them. They could, last year when they were 9-1, put teams on their toes running two different types of schemes. And they kind of hurt them there. And the fact that they didn't have their other running back alongside Darius Victor, Trey Williams, being out this game for an undisclosed injury was very hurtful for them. And the loss of Kevon Turpin was also pretty bad. They really couldn't find a go-to guy on offense. I think that really hurt them there. I think the Generals really took a step back this season. Not really impressed with the quarterback play. Would not be surprised if they missed the playoffs the way they're playing.
All right. Yes. I have a question for you, Gray. Okay. Out of these two quarterbacks for the Stallions, who is better? Who should be the starting quarterback?
Well, I do think you got to consider last year in that question, which J'Mar Smith, I believe, should be the starter, and he played really well in this game. But I was really, really impressed with Alex Magoo. The way he was, I mean, his dual threat is just as good as J'Mar Smith. And just like Alex mentioned, him finding Jay Sternberger like that is a great sign to see that that's what you want to see, especially from your backup quarterback in terms of, you know, just in general. But I do think J'Mar Smith should continue to be the starter. I would not be surprised if this remains a two quarterback system, especially if it keeps being successful for Birmingham, and especially if their defense keeps playing like they did here in this game.
Alex, do you feel the same about it?
I think it's going to be a game by game basis, like kind of was last year. They kept asking Skip Holtz about it. I think it's just going to be a case by case game, depending on who's more healthy, who they think is going to do better off. But like Greg mentioned, I think it's probably going to be at some point a two quarterback system.
Yeah, definitely. All right, moving on to our Sunday games. The first game on Sunday was the Michigan Panthers versus the Houston Gamblers. The Panthers took care of business, winning 29-13. I was so surprised to see the amount of success the Panthers had after their abysmal season last year to come in and just really look like a dominant team this year. They obviously had made all the right moves in the offseason. I really am surprised that the Houston Gamblers didn't have a go-to guy in this game with the amount of talent they had. I really thought that they were the more talented team over the Panthers, but they really could not get anything going. Alex, what did you see from this Panthers team? Not only from the quarterback play, but from the running back. So what did you see from this offense to show how dominant they were?
Yeah, so I thought going into this game, the Panthers had the upper hand with the Gamblers playing without Jordan Ta'amu, the quarterback last season, who's now in the XFL. I think you look at the offense, having Josh Love at quarterback. We already talked about him, how great he played. But like their running back, Stevie Scott and Reggie Corbin. Reggie Corbin had a great year last season. Then you added Stevie Scott, who played amazing this game. Give him a good 1-2 punch there. Looked like the best 2-1-2 punch, I think, of the weekend. But then they also have Joe Walker, who I think had the best weekend out of any wide receiver. Him and Josh Love really had a strong connection there. And then you look at their defense, having four sacks and three TFLs and two interceptions by a linebacker and a safety were pretty good. Being able to dominate both sides of the ball are going to be beneficial for this team, who I think is probably, like I mentioned earlier, one of the top three teams in the league. But you look at the Gamblers team, missing, not having Ta'amu was really hurtful for them. Kenji Bahar, people had a lot of high hopes for him coming into the season. Did not play well. I was surprised that he didn't get benched for a guy in Terry Wilson, who's the backup, who used to play at Kentucky after he transferred from Kentucky to UNLV. Didn't really have success at UNLV there. But I thought they should have given him a chance. Kenji Bahar did not inspire me at all, having no touchdowns, throwing 10 interceptions, then fumbling the ball twice and losing it once. The only real weapon they had was the running back, TJ Pledger. He had two touchdowns. But outside of that, this Gamblers team, I'm just not impressed by them at all. I think they're having one of the worst rosters in the league, outside of probably the Ballers. I think this is probably the bottom two teams to look at this season.
Speaking on this Gamblers team, Gray, where can they improve the most?
You know, just like Alex mentioned, not having Ta'amu is really, really hurt them, especially in this game of how dominant the Michigan Panthers defense looked against them. But they didn't have a wide receiver with more than two receptions in this game. It's just not. They don't have playmakers that they had last year. They don't have especially you didn't see it in this game against the Panthers. Panthers defense was really able to shut them down, especially in that second half, just like we talked about them earlier. But Kenji Bahar is did not play the game that we expected him to play with Ta'amu out in that game with two interceptions. Almost a little over 50% completion percentage, which is not what you wanted to see. But they also cannot turn the ball over the way that they did. They had four fumbles, lost two of them. Two of them were by Bahar himself. That can't happen moving forward in this season. Especially just like Alex said, with might have one of the lower tier rosters in the whole USFL.
Do y'all expect this Michigan Panthers defense to keep up with the production they've had, or do you think it's just a first game high scenario?
I definitely do, considering their head coach is Mike Nolan. I know he had some issues in the NFL as of recently, but I think coming into the USFL, he's going to have success. He proved it in the second half. I think they're going to come off a high of this game and go into the next game pretty strong.
All right, moving on to our last game of the week. We had the Pittsburgh Maulers going off against the New Orleans Breakers. The Breakers ended up taking care of business 22-15. This game was pitiful to watch. Like we said, Alex, when we were looking at these games at the beginning of the weekend, this was definitely going to be the worst game to watch, and it was. The Breakers outgained the Maulers 232 yards to 156, with the Breakers dominating time of possession. You really have so many questions for this Maulers team. Obviously, the offense is I think is worse than most FCS schools. the way they played. The Breakers aren't really that great of a team. They don't have as much talent as they did last year. But, you know, the Maulers just – they struggled on both sides of the ball. I think the only guy who was standout for this Maulers team was Reuben Foster making a return. But he can't do everything, unfortunately. I'm not even going to go ahead and start to break down this Maulers team and where they can improve because – honestly, if it were me, I would go ahead and scrap this team and rebrand it, move somewhere else, find a whole different roster of players. But to go ahead and speak on this Breakers team, what a replacement they found at QB. McLeod, he just had an astonishing game. Alex, what did you see from him? Why was he so dominant?
Yeah, you look at him, he had one of the better weeks at the quarterback position. Really an air raid offense, it kind of looked like at times to me, having thrown 41 passes. He had really kept him in the game. I think he played a great game for this Breakers team, even though the Maulers aren't a great opponent there. But their Maulers defense isn't that bad, having, like you mentioned, Reuben Foster there. But look at him. He has weapons all around him, with running back Anthony Jones being able to be a smash mouth running back and then catch receiving passes. And then you have this tight end, Sage Surratt. And then you have who I think is probably the best player on the offensive side of the ball, a wide receiver, Jonathan Adams, 6'3", 220. Just a matchup nightmare for these teams. And then a guy from, I think, Ohio State, Johnny Dixon. He's also a good weapon for him to have. I think this Breakers team, I didn't give them enough credit. They cut their leading rusher last year, who was leading rusher overall in the USFL. But I think they found a better overall offense here. And I expect them to be better, but I'm not expecting much from this team, even though they did beat the Maulers. I mean, the Maulers aren't a great opponent.
Great. Yeah. The same thing I talked about with the Michigan Panthers defense, how they had an incredible first game. I don't know if they can have continued success. Do you think this Breakers offense can have continued success?
I think there's always – I think they can. I think their situation was really good. But, man, were they able to take advantage of the Maulers' defense, even though Reuben Foster was back there? It's just Reuben Foster looked like the only player on this defense. it was so hard to watch. Just this Maulers' offense is so bad, and they just could not figure anything out offensively. Got into no absolute rhythm. But for the Breakers, I do think they can continue having success. I think they got to see them against somebody like the Panthers or the Stallions defense. To prove that, I don't think we should take too much from this game. I think this is like taking too much from a spring game in college football. This has no meaning at all for the Breakers for me because of how bad the Maulers are. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing to look at is they weren't able to complete drives. You know, we talked about the New Orleans Breaker kicker earlier on, you know, winning special teams player of the week. They weren't able to finish drives, so, you know, he had to kick field goals. And if you can't get in the end zone, that's going to be the case in which you win a game or lose a game. And obviously, you need to get in the end zone if you want to win. With this Breakers team, they have the talent. They obviously know how to run their offense. They just need to end up finishing drives. As of right now, if you had to make a pick to win the championship this season, Alex, who would you have?
I want to say the Stars, but the way the Panthers played this weekend, I know it was against the Gamblers, but they played amazing. It's a tough toss-up for me. I'm going to stick with the Stars, but I really think the Panthers, if they play good next week and continue what they did this week, would jump them in my favorites.
I was going to say the Stars, but I'll go different. For me, I really think it's going to be the Stars. The the weapons that they have added around Case Cookus, I just think that's them. But just like Alex said, the way the Panthers played this week, if they're able to have such a threat offensively with both their quarterbacks, Josh Love and Carson Strong, if they can continue what they're getting from guys like Joe Walker and Trey Quinn and those guys, and then continue whatever they did on defense against the Gamblers this week, just dominating, especially in that second half, like we said, with Breeland Speaks. If they're able to continue that, I think they're the easy favorites in this season.
I think there's definitely three teams that have been favorites so far. Of course, you've mentioned the Stars, and now we've brought up the Michigan Panthers, the Stallions. I definitely don't think they're the same team as last year. They have a bunch of holes. I could sit here for hours and talk about how they need to fix their offense and fix their defense. But overall, they have the amount of talent they need to have success. And Skip Holtz is one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the league. I think that is a main reason I still have them as title favorites. All right, Alex, I think that's all the time we have for today.
Yep, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.